Welcome to Drive Time with Dr. Douglas, an hour-long conversation about your health with Atlanta internist Dr. Adrian Douglas. Dr. Douglas has been a fixture at Piedmont Atlanta Hospital for over 20 years. He is a fellow of the American College of Physicians. He also has an MD-VIP-affiliated practice in Buckhead. For the next hour, we will explore important health topics for men and women, and we will take your calls live at 404-880-9255. Here's your host, Dr. Adrian Douglas.
Good evening, Atlanta. This is Dr. Adrian C. Douglas, your host for Drive Time with Dr. Douglas. As you know, September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. What we'd like to do today is talk about prostate cancer. Very important topic as it pertains to men, and particularly men of African descent. Prostate cancer is the second most commonly diagnosed cancer in the world, with an estimated 1.3 million cases discovered annually. Worldwide, there is an estimated 360,000 deaths annually. In the United States, prostate cancer is the third leading cause of cancer, but the second leading cause of death among men, with about 33,000 deaths each year. Out of all of this, as you know, African-American men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer more often than most American men. Black men are 2.3 times likely as white men to die from prostate cancer. Prostate cancer is the leading cause of cancer death in American men of color, of African descent. And to that end, we have in our studio today Dr. Walter Faulkner, a local board-certified urologist and a native son of Atlanta. Dr. Faulkner is a graduate of Morehouse College and eventually went off to the University of Pittsburgh, where he completed his degree in medicine and returned to Atlanta, where he completed a general surgery and urological residency and fellowship at Emory University. He has been practicing in Atlanta for the last 29 years. He serves on numerous hospital committees, chief of surgery at DeKalb Medical Center at Hillendale, chief of urology at DeKalb Medical Center, and he's a former president of the Atlanta Urological Society. He has expertise in, obviously, prostate cancer, stone disease, urinary incontinence, and erectile dysfunction. Dr. Faulkner, welcome to Drive Time with Dr. Douglas.
You're welcome, Adrian. So good to see you and be here, and thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. So you and I have known each other for a number of years. We met at Grady, and it would seem that by the time I met you, you were already a urological fellow. So you made a decision somewhere, either in medical school or maybe even as far back as Morehouse, to be a urologist. Tell me about that decision. What led you there?
Yeah, Adrian, we go back a long way as the old Grady docs, and remember those days well. And my medical journey, being from Atlanta, my grandfather was a physician in Mississippi, and I always aspired to for medicine. When I went to medical school, I really didn't have a real affinity for urology, didn't know what it was. I wanted to be a plastic surgeon, and ultimately did a rotation in urology, and I really liked the patient. I think it was the patient population, the men, older men, and of course, it was a surgical subspecialty that allowed me to do something that I love, but it really was the ability to have a solution to most problems. I mean, urology really affords an opportunity to create changes of significance in patient populations. So I changed, and I'm so happy that's been my career. It's been my choice, and my contribution to society and our community has been in the urologic world.
Excellent. So, listening audience, cancer is an uncontrolled growth of cells, wherever it may be in the body. If it's malignant, then sometimes and frequently it will leave from where its origins are and move to different parts of the body. Benign tumors sometimes can cause problems by essentially growing to a certain size where they actually cause problems, obstructing and causing pain and other difficulties. The prostate gland, Dr. Faulkner, can you tell us a little bit more about that? It's about the size of a walnut for most individuals. Is that correct?
Yes, for most men. The prostate gland is exclusively a male organ. Mm-hmm. It's one of the male reproductive organs. It has a function, And the function is it contributes, it makes up the majority of the semen, mm-hmm. the fluid we ejaculate when we have an orgasm. And, mm-hmm. of course, that's mixed with sperm that comes from the testicles and such. As we age, the prostate can go through some changes. And it's located just at the base of the bladder. And so as it changes and evolves, and one of the most common changes that it enlarges over time, mm-hmm. with age. And sometimes patients can have symptoms of that enlargement and also can get infected as one of the, like a urinary tract infection. You can get bacteria back within the prostate gland, mm-hmm. and it can develop cancer, just as most organs in the body.
You're listening to Drive Time on WCLK. I'm Dr. Adrian Douglas. On today's program, we're talking about men's health, in particular prostate cancer. As you know, September is the National Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. Our special guest is urologist Dr. Walter Faulkner. You can join us by calling 404-880-9255, 404-880-9255. So prostate cancer tends to impact men, obviously, but particularly African-American men. Risk factors, African descent, family members.
Absolutely. Yeah, all of those. I mean, if you look at prostate cancer in general, not just in the African-American population, but it's the most common cancer of all American men. The highest incidence of prostate cancer in the world, though, are with African-American men. So it is a significant disease of prevalence in our population of patients. And so there are risk factors. Mm-hmm. The more common risk factors for all men is the age. You know, we see a higher incidence of prostate cancer as we age. Mm-hmm. Family history is a significant risk factor. And we do think there probably are some genetic factors that mm-hmm. come into play for patients outside of diet and things of this nature. There are also some other exposures. A man could have had some other socioeconomic things or exposure to carcinogens. We don't know there yet. We also know in the Vietnam veteran population, exposure to Agent Orange has been one of the potential risk factors in that group of patients. So.
Mm-hmm. Certain chemicals, potentially sprays, herbicides, toxic substances like that sometimes, potentially, or industrial exposures for people that may have worked with certain things, they can potentially, just like any cancer, potentially increase one's risk of prostate cancer. So it's really a history of exposure in some situations.
In some situations, yeah. And if you have a genetic predisposition, does the gene turn on? So is mm-hmm. it through environmental factors or dietary factors that mm-hmm. we make the gene turn on, or does it stay dormant throughout our lifetime and never express itself?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, Lana, again, we're talking about cancer, and cancer is when a cell just continues to grow uncontrolled. In other words, the switch has been cut on, and it just keeps going. And so that can become a problem. It can sometimes be considered benign. Cancers can be. In most situations, we get more concerned or absolutely concerned when we're dealing with malignant cancers because they tend to spread around. So how do we find out about prostate cancer? And we need to kind of test people. So there can be controversies about it, but I think that we're in agreement that we need to check our patients and figure out about prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are recommendations of screening that are sound that have been validated by the American Cancer Society and American Urologic Association. And we recommend that all men 50 and above get screening, and then men of African descent or men who have family history begin screening at age 40. In my practice, I screen all men at age 40. I think that men should be looked in. That screening does require two things. One is a PSA, which is a blood test, and then it's coupled with a recommended that a digital rectal examination, old finger wave that a lot of men don't like, but it is a recommended part of screening, and that should be done once a year. Mm-hmm. We do have high-risk groups. I have a African-American patient who has a strong family history that we may screen them every 6 months, mm-hmm. So we're not kind of held or bound to the one-year screening for patients. And then there's some data that says what's the ceiling of when to stop screening. Should you stop at age 70? And I'm also someone who individualizes patients. We have patients who are older than 70 that we will consider screening, even though the broad-based recommendations are to stop screening at age 70.
So gentlemen, just listen what we're saying. You really need to get your screening done. You need to get the PSA done, and you do need to do the digital rectal examination. You've heard Dr. Faulkner. That is an important part of it. I've had patients who've somewhat balked about doing that, Dr. Faulkner, but that's something important that we need to do. We're able to, in a lot of situations, determine a difference in the shape, the size of the prostate by doing the digital exam. So, and it doesn't take very long or very 5 seconds at the most or something along that line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's uncomfortable test. So we have to admit, I don't like getting mine checked, you know, but it is a necessary thing. The reason we screen, because in the early stages of prostate cancer, most men don't have any symptoms, and so you have to screen the patients to identify issue. If a man does have symptoms, like a decreased voiding pressure, as waking at night to urinate, pain, they definitely need to get in to see their primary care physician or urologist. But mm-hmm. even the asymptomatic patient can have prostate cancer in the early stages that we can deal with in a much more convenient fashion.
404-880-9255, 404-880-9255. That's WCLK. We're talking about prostate cancer. Atlanta, we really want to hear from you. If you've been a person that knows of someone that has had prostate cancer, if you are a person presently in treatment for prostate cancer, if you're a survivor of prostate cancer, please call in. We'd love to hear about your experience or your knowledge of prostate cancer. We're very interested in your contribution to what we're talking about today, a most important topic about prostate cancer and how it impacts our society. So prostate cancer is something that is important. It impacts, you know, men of African descent in a greater fashion. There are a number of different types of prostate cancer. The adenocarcinoma form of prostate cancer more involves the glands, but there sometimes can be some other ones also that are a little bit different that we need to be also aware of also. Kind of similar to some with colonoscopies, sometimes individuals can have a flat colon cancer instead of something sticking out that's easily seen by the gastroenterologist. So there are some other ones that are a little bit different. Dr. Faulkner, can you tell us a little bit about those other types of cancers that aren't the traditional ones mm-hmm. for the prostate?
Yeah, the most common cancer of prostate is an adenocarcinoma or a glandular prostate cancer. We talk about the prostate is a gland, mm-hmm. so that's the most common. But there are sometimes some differentiations of other tissues within the prostate, like the ductal tissue the patient can develop, or a transitional carcinoma that's really of the lining of the urine tube that goes to the prostate gland. So, and these things may present with other different types of symptoms like blood in the urine or pain. And so these patients who have definitely symptoms of some kind in the urinary tract definitely need to be evaluated and screened to rule out prostate cancer as the cause of some of those symptoms.
Yep. So various symptoms can be urinary frequency and urgency. Gotta go. You know, a hesitancy, stand there and wait for 5 seconds or 10 seconds before something comes out. Straining, lower back pain, groin pain, testicular pain, pelvic pain, blood in the urine. Any of these things can be signs and symptoms of a problem involving your urinary tract, your urological system, your prostate, your bladder, your kidneys. And sometimes individuals, unfortunately, can have more than one process going on. Is that correct, Dr. Faulkner?
Yeah, that's correct.
So when we begin the process of making the diagnosis of prostate cancer, someone has an elevated PSA. And let's just talk about the numbers. So what's a good range in terms of what's acceptable range? And then there may even be some differences for different populations, people of African descent, and then people of certain age. Actually, Dr. Faulkner, I think we've got a caller in. Let's just take this caller. Frederick from Cumming, thanks for calling Drive Time with Dr. Douglas.
Dr. Douglas, good to take my call. I appreciate that. My question to Dr. Faulkner and to yourself mm-hmm. is, I had prostate cancer. I had the surgery and all, but in that process, my erections never came back. So what can you enlighten us on that part, or what needs to be happening in order to make it happen, if it can happen?
Mm-hmm. So with the various types of treatment, in terms of you having had a prostatectomy, at the best effort of any and everyone, the attempt was to do a nerve-sparing surgery. Things aren't 100%, so that sometimes occurs. Frequently enough, right after having the surgery, individuals are given certain medications, to help to try to stimulate erection. Some of them are branded names, but they're the erectile medications. A lot of times that is provided by the urologist, at least the ones that I have seen. Dr. Faulkner, you want to comment on that a little bit further?
Yeah, Frederick. How are you doing with your diagnosis? Have you been cured of your prostate cancer?
I've been cured of my prostate, Wonderful. But I'm having problems getting erections again.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I'm happy that you had a successful surgery in that regard. That was the goal. Now, one of the consequences of the treatment, not just with surgery, but also with radiation treatments or freezing, these other host treatments we have for prostate cancer, is erectile dysfunction as a consequence of those treatments. And so the nerves that supply the male erection run close to the prostate gland. They're not part of the prostate gland, but in the surgery or the radiation or the freezing, those nerves can be injured or damaged with the process, and so sometimes that's a consequence of the treatment. Now there are, of the surgery, there are treatments, as Dr. Douglas said, some pharmaceutical medications. Always tend to evaluate the patients to see, was it the prostate surgery, or because our erections are a vascular phenomenon, it's really blood flowing into the penis. There's some tests we do to measure to see if blood flows within the penis. There are some other treatments like injections, believe it or not, the men inject into the penis that draw blood into the penis. There's some surgical things that we can do as well, the placement of penile implants and things of this nature. So I always counsel patients that, and also depends on what's the timeline from your surgery, because there are a number of patients who will have issues with their erections initially, and over time things improve as you heal from the surgery or more oxygenation occurs within the penile tissue. So there are a host of things that can be offered for you. What I am happy for is that you had a successful cancer surgery. And then I always counsel patients, we can deal with some of the unfortunate side effects or of the treatment, but the goal was to get the cancer eradicated. And I'm really happy that was the result for you.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. The cancer is gone as far as we could tell. So that part is a done deal, but I just never regained. But hey, I appreciate you taking my call, and we'll continue to work on that part.
Thank you for calling. We do appreciate you. So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Drive Time on WCLK. I'm Dr. Adrian C. Douglas. Callers, stay on the line. If you have a question about today's discussion about prostate cancer and men's health, please call us at 404-880-9255, 404-880-9255.
Programming on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is made possible in part by MDVIP. Dr. Adrian Douglas, host of Drive Time with Dr. Douglas, is an affiliated physician with MDVIP. He has practiced internal medicine at Piedmont Hospital for more than 20 years. Patients in his primary care practice take part in an annual wellness program. He offers same and next day appointments that start on time and last as long as needed. Dr. Douglas is also available by phone after hours. More information is available at mdvip.com.
Welcome back to Drive Time on WCLK. I'm Dr. Adrian Douglas, and if you would like to take part in tonight's live conversation about prostate cancer, please call us at 404-880-9255. Now, at this point, we're going to take a caller, a very special caller, a Ms. Uzma Khan, who is the executive director of the Georgia Prostate Cancer Coalition. She's going to give us some information about her organization and some upcoming screenings. Thanks for calling in, Ms. Khan.
You are welcome. Thanks for having me, Dr. Douglas. Good evening, everybody. As Dr. Douglas mentioned, I am Uzma Khan, and very humbled and very honored to be serving as an interim executive director of Georgia Prostate Cancer Coalition, a nonprofit organization serving the Georgian community for 20 years in year 2020. This foundation was formed in year 2000, and it's comprised of several prostate cancer survivors, volunteers, and families, members that are touched by this monstrous disease. We are the largest prostate cancer organization in the state of Georgia, with chapters in Atlanta, Macon, and we do express our interest in Albany, Augusta, and Columbus. We use several different mediums in serving our communities, such as hosting speaking engagements, health fairs, free screening events. GPCC promotes awareness of prostate cancer in Georgia and the importance of regular screening as a part of early detection process. Now, early detection is the key over here. The vision of this organization is to eliminate all deaths due to prostate cancer in Georgia, and our mission is to build prostate cancer awareness, provide education, and improving quality of life of communities affected by prostate cancer in Georgia. Please visit our website. I cannot stress enough on gathering a lot more information on the organization, on our screening events that are coming up, screening events that we have conducted already, and to get the information on several topics such as what is the prostate, what is prostate cancer, the diagnosis, signs, symptoms, risk factors, screenings and surveillances, treatment options that are all around you. Our website is www.georgiapcc.org. www.georgiapcc.org. Please visit our website. We have our two events that are coming up in October.
Excellent.
On October 5th, which is a high-priority global U.S. public health advocacy roundtable leadership discussion. It's very important. We have our key keynote guest speaker, Dr. Peter Glegg, who is a global public health legal expert, senior legal advisor of the University of West Indies. And the topics that we will be touching will be global public health legal implications of telehealth, both now in dealing with COVID-19 and as the wave of the future, the global shift in public health platform challenges and its impact on just medical systems for disadvantaged communities, and the effects of COVID-19 research, and especially on prostate cancer.
Excellent.
This will be live streamed on the 5th of October.
Okay.
So please visit our website so you can learn how to tap into this and to be part of it. We have our second free community screening event coming up on the 31st of October at iVillage at MARTA, 70 Hamilton East Holmes Road, Northwest Atlanta. It is in conjunction with NPUs of Atlanta, in particular NPU-J and the neighboring NPUs. We will be the nucleus of the screening event is PSA screening, free community PSA screening, along with COVID screenings. The protocols will be, the COVID-19 protocols will be strictly followed, 6 feet social distancing, sanitization, wearing masks. We are also offering a lot of basic health screenings in conjunction with many other local organizations and healthcare providers.
That's exciting.
Please come visit us. Yes, sir, on the 31st of October at iVillage MARTA, 17 Hamilton East Holmes Drive, Northwest Atlanta. I cannot thank enough Georgia community for allowing GPCC to serve us, to serve Georgia State. We wish everybody to stay blessed, stay safe, and please know your numbers. I cannot stress enough on everybody, all the men out there, to know your numbers. You might be thinking why she's stressing so much as a female to be talking about numbers in prostate cancer. 7 years ago, prostate cancer became my story when I lost my husband to prostate cancer. So this is for real, guys. Please go out there, know your numbers. Please visit us on our website at www.georgiapcc.org. Gather all the information and resources that are available. It's all on our website. Contact us if you have any questions. We'll be more than delighted to serve and answer. And please come on the 31st of October as we offer the free screening.
Thank you
and
so much.
On the 6th of October.
Thank
yes,
you.
Sir.
Thank you, Ms. Kahn. Thanks so much for taking the time and enlightening us about your organization and the free screenings and the informational webinar that will be available to the public. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Faulkner, you've worked with them in the past, haven't you?
Yeah, they're just a wonderful organization that provides support for the physicians who are out here on the front lines trying to do prostate screening. This Georgia Prostate Cancer Coalition has been around for many years. And get involved. I mean, I think that the screening efforts, the free screening in this community during Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, is wonderful. I mean, we shouldn't let economics keep us from having access to care. And so these kind of programs are free to the community.
Yes.
Don't just come by yourself. Bring a friend. You know, share the information. We love it when it's a full house.
Absolutely. That's good. So you heard it, Alana. Now I think we have Medora and Marietta. Medora, thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for calling Drive Time.
Sure, I just happened to have you guys on. I'm calling regarding the swelling that you mentioned. I was wondering why the swelling can't be brought down.
Now, we've talked about a lot of different things. Now, when you're talking about swelling, we're talking about prostate, swelling in the prostate. Is that what we were talking about?
Correct.
Okay. So, swelling usually is indicative in the body of inflammation. Almost everything is an itis. So when someone says itis, they're talking about something that is inflamed and it's usually swollen. So with prostatitis, then that is usually associated with a bacterial infection that gets in a man's prostate. As Dr. Faulkner mentioned, as we get older, our prostates tend to get larger, and we tend to sometimes trap bacteria in our prostate, and that can lead to an infection. Also, as we get older, we actually have an enlargement in the prostate. Older men, frequently enough, have a number of different symptoms indicative of an enlarged prostate. Have to urinate frequently, have to incomplete evacuation. They may have to strain, they may have to turn back around and go, they may have dribbling. It's a lot of different things that comes from an enlarged prostate. There are medicines and treatments that can be provided for that, and that is usually considered to be a benign prostatic enlargement in most situations. Although, as Dr. Faulkner will tell us, on occasion when they're taking care of what has been felt to be a benign enlargement, they clip a piece of prostate cancer. So, Dr. Faulkner, tell us about the treatments for enlarged prostate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a host of treatments for enlarged prostate. And, Adrian, you're absolutely right. I mean, I tell patients, you know, don't get fooled by the symptoms, because we can assume that these symptoms you described, or the symptoms that Medora's talking about, the swelling of the prostate, maybe difficulty voiding, is just from benign enlargement. But these patients actually have to be evaluated for prostate cancer as well. If that's normal, then there are a host of treatment. There are medicines that relax the prostate or shrink the prostate that can benefit the patient. There are some herbal things that we found that do the same thing over a slower period of time. And then there are some other more definitive treatments that we do at the level of the prostate, using different energy systems to shrink the prostate or open the prostate channel up. So there are a host of things that are available for men who have these symptoms. And it really improves quality of life, but also, if the man is not voiding to completion, it creates a back pressure that affects the kidney. So it's more than just being inconvenienced by the voiding. It actually can create some physiologic problems upstream that could affect us down the road in terms of kidney function.
And including the bladder also, that can get enlarged, a term that we describe hypertrophy, which means enlargement. Just like someone's muscles isn't getting enlarged on their arm from lifting heavy weights, your bladder can get enlarged from pushing against an enlarged prostate. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Main thing, whatever we're talking about enlarged prostate, you still need to have someone check it and make sure prostate cancer symptoms are similar to BPH, and a lot of times they can coexist. Point taken. We've got Bob in Swanee. Bob, thanks for calling Drive Time.
Listen, doctor and doctor, thank you very much for, first of all, for the program itself and for the clearly informative information that people like myself and the rest of the listening audience must know. As I was telling you when I called in, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, but they called it at such an early stage. My second opinion doctor, John Hopkins, said he had never seen cancer called so soon, okay? So thanks to Dr. Ronald Anglade for his prompt review of that biopsy in that regard. But I've been under radical observation, right? So we're still dealing with that 3-4 years down the road. But the BPH has been a concern because the medication has not reduced it sufficient enough for it to, let the room up off the stream itself for the flow, for me to flow properly. And I heard of this new procedure called Rezūm, which to me seems a lot less invasive than some of the other procedures that had been suggested. And I was wondering if you could give me some insight on that.
Dr. Faulkner?
Yeah, I can, Bob. Dr. Anglade is my partner, and you were in great hands, and I'm glad he I knew he took good care of you.
Ron, I'm not tapping on the back for no reason.
That's right. Yeah, okay. Ron's a fantastic urologist and serves that Gwinnett community very well. He really does.
Yes. He's a good brother too. Very down to earth, and you can talk to him about anything.
That's right.
You know, he's my guy. Yeah, so go ahead, because I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But there are some options. What Bob is speaking to, there's a treatment. It's really a water vapor treatment. So it's using energy of steam, a water vapor to shrink the prostate tissues down. And you said in your talk, much less invasive, because if you look at the traditional treatments for enlarged prostate, we would do what we call a TURP, or men called it a Roto-Rooter. We go in and trim things out, which is a very effective treatment. A very effective treatment, but it did have some side effects. So the Rezūm, and there's another one, UroLift, these kind of procedures that are minimally invasive but still have excellent outcomes are good options for patients who have symptomatic or symptoms of BPH and want to get off medications, or the medications haven't been effective and things of this nature. So it is something I would consider, for you. You can talk to Dr. Anglade. I know he does that as part of his practice. And I think that would be an excellent option for you.
So thank you so much.
Thanks you for calling us, Bob. We do appreciate you. And thanks for listening to Drive Time. So we're talking about prostate cancer. And we have Dr. Walter Faulkner, board-certified urologist, here with us in the studio today. September is National Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, so we're talking about prostate cancer, but we're talking about a little bit of everything regarding to men's health. Dr. Faulkner, what about saw palmetto? That's a good old berry that they found on the coast of the Carolinas and in Georgia. I mean, some people would tout that that's something that can help with your prostate being enlarged. What would you tell me about that?
I would say that there's been science to it. I think that it is these old wives' tales. I think patients have been living a long time before we had all of this kind of Western medicine and pharmaceuticals and things. Mm-hmm. And so some of the data we see in these natural herbalists or the Native American medicine man or the Chinese herbalists, my grandmother used to wrap myself in leaves when I had congestion. I didn't know what it was, but there's science to that. And so saw palmetto has been studied. It does create some shrinkage or reduction of prostate size. And it's been shown to work. So there are patients, men who use kind of prostate wellness formulas. I tell patients I don't know which one. I don't recommend one versus the other. But if they've been evaluated and found only to have BPH, it is an approach for patients to consider in a natural way of reducing the size of the prostate.
So with the saw palmetto, particularly medications that shrink the prostate, we still have to be careful about keeping up with the PSA, Dr. Faulkner, right? I mean, a PSA that's rising is a PSA is rising, no matter if you're on saw palmetto, if you're on medications that shrink benign prostatic hypertrophy, it's still a PSA that's rising, and we got to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. That we there are ways of the pharmaceuticals that shrink. We know if the PSA is cut in half, what that means. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges we have on patients who use things like saw palmetto is we don't know the overall effect of what it does with PSA. That's why I counsel my patients, just let me know if you're using it, because I can factor it into my decision making whether it's something that has dropped to a point that we don't need to be evaluating it or we do. So.
Studies would suggest that 80% of Americans are using supplements of some sorts. During your encounter with your healthcare provider, make sure that you inform them of all of the supplements that you are taking. Most of these supplements are natural medications that are later manipulated or altered into chemical compounds that we use directly now. And so they have interactions. We need to know about those supplements that you're taking. So Dr. Faulkner, so our PSA is, up. And again, we were briefly talking about PSA and measuring it, and range is 0 to 4. And some would suggest that you need to maybe do different PSAs for different categories, people of certain groups, age, ethnicity, anything that you might tell us about PSAs?
Yeah, you know, PSA is the screening test. It's not specific for prostate cancer, though there are a host of things that can make the PSA rise. Prostatitis, as you spoke about, enlarged prostate, and prostate cancer. There are certain ways we do integrate PSA as well. I'll tell patients, you know, usually we found that ejaculation can make the PSA rise. So when patients come in for follow-up, I'll tell them, you know, please do not ejaculate for 48 hours. We make sure that we draw the PSA before we do the digital rectal examinations. Anything that could create a false elevation of the PSA, we try to avoid. Now, that value being between 0 and 4 is a standard value. There are patients that we obviously anything above 4 we would consider elevated, but we also start now to look at age specific numbers. What's normal for a man who's 40, 50, 60, and 70? So if you have a 40-year-old male who comes in, their PSA is 3.5. That's too high for that age group. Mm-hmm. And so that's a person that we may want to look at. On the same token, if you have a 70-year-old male whose PSA is 4.1, it may not be necessarily from prostate cancer, but just the increased size of the prostate. So you have to individualize the patients. You have to not be rigid in what you think, but really try to see other conditions. There are men who come in that you'll send to me who have had prostatitis, and they have had elevated PSA. So sometimes we'll put the patient on a round of antibiotics first and have them come back and repeat the PSA just to see, because you don't want to, for every patient, go down the path of a diagnostic evaluation that can be expensive and invasive as well.
Which we'll talk about in a moment. Mm-hmm. We've got Gary from Marietta. Gary, thanks for calling Drive Time.
Hey, good evening. How you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for calling in and listening in.
My doctor diagnosed me with a high PSA. I went and gave up blood and urine. And then she prescribed some antibiotics for me. But my problem is, and my question is there any way this can be cured without having surgery?
Well, right now, we don't really know what the diagnosis is. You gave us a sign. What we do is we do signs and symptoms. Now, you talked about an elevated PSA. You didn't really tell us that you were having urinary symptoms, which I'm assuming. Your doctor is treating you for what we would call prostatitis. And so a round of antibiotics would be given first, and then at some point in time, we would repeat the PSA to see whether or not it normalizes or comes down. That's the strategy. So right now, you have an elevated PSA. You have not been diagnosed with cancer. The presumption is that you are being treated for an infection, itis. Remember, itis is inflammation in the prostate. And we're giving you antibiotics, and we're going to step back and have you come back in and repeat that PSA a little bit later on. Now, remember, one thing that Dr. Faulkner just pointed out, 48 hours before you go to get your blood drawn, make sure you don't have any sex, because that's going to put that PSA back up again. And so we don't know. Ooh. Yeah, that's right. You got to hold back. Hold back. Be cool now. All right. Okay.
All right.
Okay now.
It can be 47 hours.
Okay. 47 hours. All right. All right. Thank you for calling, sir. So another thing that can cause we got Tim from Hawaii. We need to grab him if he's calling from Hawaii. Tim, can you hear us?
Indeed. Dr. Douglas, how are you, sir?
I'm doing Tim. Brother Tim, how you doing out in Hawaii?
I am doing well. I saw the tag. I said I must call in. I did call in a little late, so you guys may have answered this. Mm-hmm. First of all, let me say that this is some great information. Appreciate you guys doing this.
Thank you.
My question is, how reliable is the digital rectal exam and the PSA?
Okay. Well, I mean, that's certainly the gold standard. If you're asking me statistics and percentages, that's kind of a hard one for me to answer. But I'll tell you, I think it's pretty reliable. I don't know that there is a lot more that you can do. You can even get, if you will, an image, and it's just an image, and which we'll talk about. I mean, ultrasound, you know, MRI, I mean, that may show something, but that doesn't prove that there's a cancer there. It really comes down to the gold standard is actually, you know, a biopsy. So a lot of times, yeah, you can have benign prostatic hypertrophy. You can have a benign asymmetry to your prostate. You could have an inflamed prostate because one has prostatitis. That makes the exam a little bit different. On that time, it's boggy. Okay, and so that can change it. The PSAs can be elevated for a number of different causes and reasons. And one other thing, Tim, and also listening audience, if you are a cyclist and you ride bicycles for long periods of time, if you're sitting on that bicycle seat, in Atlanta there's a lot of cycling going on these days, that can drive your PSA up. So again, there's so many different things that can cause that. Obviously, manipulation, if you go into the hospital and you just had a procedure, not a urological procedure, and sometimes they put a catheter in, that's not the time to get your PSA measured. It's going to be really elevated, you know, for a period of days or months. I'll let Dr. Faulkner kind of weigh in also. Tim, thank you for calling, and I hope everything is well for you in Hawaii.
Everything is doing well, but thanks so much for sharing this information.
So this is Dr. Faulkner, one of your Morehouse brothers.
How are you doing,
Dr. Faulkner?
Yes, sir.
How are you, sir? How are you?
I'm doing fine. You make a good. I mean, PSA is a controversial test. I mean, mm-hmm. It's not a ideal screening test because it's not specific for a particular condition of the prostate gland. And so in terms of this reliability, it's not reliable in making the diagnosis of prostate cancer, but it's much better than what we had 40 years ago, which was really nothing in patients. So you have to kind of use it. You know, I tell you, the best application of PSA is a linear PSA. So we tell patients to come in once a year and we plot them over time because we look at certain things like the PSA velocity. If your PSA was 1 last year and this year's 3, that jump in the PSA is one of the things that makes us say, well, maybe we need to look at this. So we use it in a way to decide whether you need to have another or have a biopsy. Now, there are other forms of PSA that we're doing, like free PSA and some other kind of manipulations of PSA that help us make the decision. But ultimately, your urologist or your physician is trying to decide if you fall in the group that needs to be looked at a little more closely or not. You know, so some men come in, the PSA is normal, come back and see me in a year. What I tell patients to do is just don't come back and see me in a year. Do some of the preventative things, the prostate wellness things. You know, look at lower your cholesterol by eating right and doing some herbal formulation. So there's a lot we can do to lower our risk until you come back next year for a new appointment.
Okay.
One of them, Tim, is moving to Hawaii. Getting out the Southeast helps. Huh?
Yeah, moving to Hawaii will certainly help out with most things.
Okay.
But I can tell you this, though. I got two pearls of good information that I did not know anything about, and that's bike riding and sex. Stop it or don't do it before you go and get your test. So that's certainly a couple of things that I didn't have any idea about. So
and make sure that they draw the blood before they do the digital rectal examination as well.
Ah, there you go. So noted. Well, gentlemen, thank you so very much for this good information and answers to those questions, and stay well.
All right. Peace be with you.
Be safe.
So we're talking about PSAs, and we're talking about prostate and various PSA ranges. And so, again, that was a timely call in, you know, for him to come in and talk about the validity of PSAs. Eventually, one goes to a biopsy. That's where we kind of get our answers. So the biopsy is where you actually stick a needle in the prostate and you get tissue and eventually it's put under the microscope. You can explain a little bit more about just kind of the frequency of the biopsies, how many passes, things along that line, the technique.
Yeah, well, the biopsy is usually an ultrasound-guided biopsy, so it's not a blind biopsy.
Yeah,
it used to be years ago when I was a resident, we didn't have ultrasound, so we blindly biopsied the patient. Now, with ultrasound, it serves as a guide, so we're looking at the prostate in real time. We're looking at things that look different, and that's what we sample. The recommendation is not just what we see that looks different, but a survey of the prostate. So most men will get about 12 core biopsies of different spaces within the prostate that are sent to a pathologist that reads it. Within the ultrasound, we also look at the size, the overall size of the prostate. We measure that if anything looks suspicious within the prostate. We also have the application now of MRI fusion biopsy. So using MRI, which is a much better imaging modality than ultrasound to look at the prostate. And we can now do MRI fused biopsies where we have the MRI help us see even more architecture of the prostate as well. And so once the biopsies are done, the samples are sent to the pathologist, and they'll tell us whether it shows prostate cancer or it's negative.
Good. That's good. All right. We have Ebony from the ATL. Ebony, thanks for calling Drive Time.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking my call. I just had a couple of questions. This is just so incredibly timely, so thank you for doing this. But so my husband, his PSA has been steadily increasing, and so then they had recommended that he get a biopsy.
Indeed.
And which he did fairly recently, and then they came back and said that the biopsy was cancerous.
Yes.
And so we're just kind of, and I say we because it's, you know, a decision that we're going through together. But so we're just kind of confused, really. One is that, you know, we're finding that the one urologist who does surgery is pushing the surgery, and then the other one who's pushing radiology is pushing radiology, or radiation, sorry. And just not, so just kind of like, how, what would you advise in terms of how to even make the decision? That's the first question. And then the other question was, you know, whether or not we could consider things like red wine or pomegranate, I can never pronounce it, but pomegranate grape, to kind of stall it off, to, you know. So those were a couple of questions that we had. Like I said, just kind of feeling overwhelmed and confused right now.
Well, I do understand, and, you know, I trust that your husband is going to get, you know, appropriate care and will have a wonderful outcome in terms of a cure. Getting more than one opinion is always the way to go. That's the first thing. You've gotten one or two opinions. You can always get a third opinion. We're talking about, you know, a life and death decision. So, you know, getting yet a third tiebreaker opinion may be the appropriate thing to do. One thing is when you have a biopsy and it comes back positive, then your urologist will use some data that they get from that biopsy called a Gleason score. And a Gleason score, the higher the Gleason score, then the more likelihood of it being aggressive in nature. So that's really important, knowing what the Gleason score is. Similar to a PSA, knowing what your PSA number is, and once you get a biopsy, then I think that's a reasonable thing, Dr. Faulkner, is knowing what your Gleason score is. And that will help you in terms of the decision. I don't know about the idea of pomegranate or, if you will, berries of any sorts and wine in terms of that. We're talking about cancer. Now, one thing about prostate cancer, some prostate cancers, and that's where it becomes, you know, a challenge. Some prostate cancers are slow growing. Some are rapid. That's where you want to try to get the answers. Dr. Faulkner.
Yeah. Ebony, how old is your husband?
She's still 58.
58, okay. And so there are a lot of things that come into play when you make a decision of treatment and the type of treatment. Well, number one, if the patient's life expectancy is 10 years or greater, which a 58-year-old male is, then they definitely think some form of treatment at the level of the prostate is necessary. There are a host of different modalities for treatment. Historically, the gold standard has been surgery, which is to remove the prostate. That has evolved in something called a robotic prostatectomy, or removing the prostate via scope as an option, and it is a viable option. It's the standard of care still in the country with a competent robotic surgeon. Now, about 30 years ago, we started doing work with radiation, particularly the placement of radiation pellets or seeds or external radiation as a treatment. Cryotherapy or freezing the prostate is an option. There's a newer treatment called a high-intensity focused ultrasound, which is also a new treatment. So there are a host of different options, for patients. What I counsel patients to do is, as Dr. Douglas said, prostate cancers are usually slow-growing tumors. Even the ones with the higher Gleason scores don't move as rapidly as some other cancers. So it does afford the patient the opportunity to do some due diligence research to see what they would feel is the right option for you. And for a lot of patients, if it's early and just confined to the prostate, sometimes it's philosophical. It's not what we want to do. Sometimes if it's early, no matter what we did to the prostate, probably could cure the patient. So factors of choice of treatment are very important for the patient, with a consideration of quality of life. So you're choosing a treatment, but you also want something that allows you to have good quality years afterwards for the treatment. So there are some doctors who, that's what they do, and so they speak very favorably about the treatment that they offer. And so it is a tough situation to be in. As Dr. Douglas said, getting opinions are important. Talking to patients who've had the particular treatment, so talk to some patients who've had the surgical removal, talk to some patients who've had the radiation treatment, and see kind of what the experience. You have time to do that, depending on when the biopsy was, but it is something that I hope at his young age that you do come to a decision that to do something formal. What you asked about the natural things, there are a group of men who do what we call active surveillance, mm-hmm. who choose not to do anything. Those patients have to change their whole diet. They can't just continue to eat unhealthy when you have this cancer there. So there's some recommendations of things like pomegranate and wine and a whole course of things that these patients can do. Along with that, though, I tell patients who do active surveillance, they have to have surveillance, which means they have to undergo biopsies periodically. They have to come in and have the PSA checked. And so, but it is the natural history of prostate cancer is that it's going to grow and spread. Mm-hmm. So I tell patients, if you're 58 years old and you have prostate cancer, we can watch and wait this, but ultimately this is going to continue to grow and spread. So at that young age, I definitely would come to a decision of doing something formal and not really go down the active surveillance. Well, he could for a little period of time, but ultimately he's going to need something done. And if he's going to need something done, he might as well do it now.
And thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. And Dr. Faulkner, mm-hmm. Can we actually make an appointment to see you as well? Like, how do we go about doing that?
Yeah, how do we get in contact with you, Dr. Faulkner?
Yeah, absolutely. We're more than welcome to see you. I'm a part of George Urology, which is the largest urologic practice in the Southeast. Our website is www.gaurology.com. Well, my office number is 404-292-3727. And my last name is Falconer. Mm-hmm. It's like Falconer, depending on.
You said F-A-L?
C-O-N-E-R. It's pronounced Falconer.
Okay.
And the Falcons are winning. I'll say it's Falconer.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. And best of luck to him. I'll be happy to see you if you like.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for calling. So you all have learned that prostate cancer is the second leading cancer diagnosed in men, but unfortunately is the number one cause of cancer-related deaths in African-American men. 1 in 6 African-American men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer in their lifetime. So by the age of 40, men, you should bring up the conversation of prostate cancer screening with your primary care provider. For that matter, by the age of 40, you should bring up the concept of cancer screening in general with your primary care provider. You should get checkups on a regular basis. You know, you should maintain a healthy weight throughout your life. Proper nutrition and exercise. You should strive to know your family history. The answer is in your gene pool. I'm not talking about your Levi's. I'm talking about actually your family, knowing what's going on with your family. And then be proactive. Being proactive will certainly help. Finally, you should search for a physician that is easily accessible and whom you can easily talk about the various intimate issues of your health. That's something that we really feel strongly about. And so we'd like to thank Dr. Walter Faulkner for being with us today. Thank you for being here, Walter. Appreciate you being here present. We look forward to continuing to work for each other in these years till our retirement. That won't be too long. It'll be a while for me. I don't know about you.
Yeah, well, Adrian, you're my physician. I've been seeing Dr. Douglas personally for years, and I'll continue that relationship.
I appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, you have it. So, next month, we're going to have, on October the 7th, we'll be talking about breast cancer and observation of National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We're going to have with us local radiation oncologist, Dr. Karen Godet. She will be featured. So, I want to make sure that you're here with us on October the 7th at 6 p.m., listening to what we have to tell you on Drive Time. Thanks for listening in. This is Dr. Douglas. Goodbye.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Drive Time with Dr. Douglas on WCLK. More information about Dr. Douglas and MDVIP is available at mdvip.com or by phone at 1-866-347-9339. You can listen to this program a second time on demand at WCLK.com. Drive Time with Dr. Douglas is produced by WCLK in conjunction with MDVIP. Executive producer for MDVIP is Sean Kelly. The producer for WCLK is Rob Maynard. On behalf of Dr. Adrian Douglas, MDVIP, and WCLK, we wish you the best of health.